Now we're in chapter 7 of Zechariah, and we've kind of finished off perhaps the most intense part of Zechariah's ministry, where he had 8 visions all in one night. And we pick up chapter 7 of verse 1. It says, "In the 4th year of King Darius, the word of the Lord came to Zechariah on the 4th day of the 9th month, the month of Kislev." So this is about 2 years after the chapter 6, so he's sort of had all those visions and stuff, and time's gone on, and now we're 2 years later. And we see that the people of Bethel had sent Sherezer and Regemmelech together with their men to entreat the Lord by asking the priest of the house of the Lord Almighty and the prophets, "Should I mourn and fast in the 5th month as I have done for so many years?" Now, just a couple of things, a bit of background information here. First of all, Bethel is a place, the name means house of God. And it was the place where, you remember when Jacob was running from Esau, God met him with angels ascending and descending on a ladder. And that was at the place of this place, Bethel. And Bethel became a place that was perhaps infamous rather than famous in Israel's history, because what had happened is that when Solomon died, there was a bit of a dispute over the kingdom. So up until that time, Israel was one nation with 12 tribes, and Solomon died, and his son Rehoboam became king, and there was a bit of stirring going on, and a fella by the name of Jeroboam sort of led a bit of a rebellion against Rehoboam for a number of reasons. And in 1 Kings 12:26 it says, "Jeroboam thought to himself," that's the northern kingdom, "the kingdom will now likely revert to the house of David if these people go up to offer sacrifices at the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem, and they will again give their allegiance to their Lord, Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they will kill me and return to King Rehoboam. And after seeking advice, the king made 2 golden calves. He said to the people, 'It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Here are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt.' And one he set up in Bethel and the other in Dan. And this thing became a sin, and the people came to worship the one at Bethel and went as far as Dan to worship the other." And so I guess the fact that the people from Bethel are coming to seek the Lord in Jerusalem is actually a fairly significant thing. Because what it means is that the Lord is reuniting the two kingdoms, Israel and Judah. So we've got remember that the Israelites had been scattered throughout the earth by the Assyrians. The Babylonians had taken the people from Judah, the southern kingdom, into exile, and now the people from Judah are returning to Jerusalem and they're rebuilding the temple and re-establishing the city. But now we've got the people from Bethel coming down to seek the Lord, whereas before they were seeking the Lord in Bethel with the golden calves, which, of course, was offensive to God. So according to the prophecies, the Lord is reuniting the nation. And so that was a pretty significant statement. And so these guys come down to seek the Lord by asking a question of the priests and the prophets. And the question is the 5th month still a month of fasting or of consecration? Now, interestingly, the reason they were fasting, there wasn't actually a fast proclaimed by the Lord, but it was during the 5th month that the temple had been destroyed when the Babylonians had come in and sacked Jerusalem, I guess. And so God didn't institute this fast, but it's evident that the people had set up a fast themselves as a sign of their distress and sorrow and so on. But of course, now the temple's being rebuilt in Jerusalem, And so the people from Bethel are coming down to say, well, do we have to keep on fasting then? Because we were fasting because the temple was destroyed. Now the temple's being rebuilt. Should we continue our fasting or should we not? So let's see what the Lord says to their question. So verse 4 says, Then the word of the Lord Almighty came to me. Ask all the people of the land and the priests, when you fasted and mourned in the fifth and seventh months for the past 70 years, was it really for me that you fasted? And when you were eating and drinking, were you not just feasting for yourselves? So again, God's responses, they always seem to be a little bit offbeat. You wonder, hang on, this isn't the question that we asked, but it kind of is a response to that question. Interesting to note that he talks about the fifth and the seventh month. The reason that the seventh month is put in there is because the Babylonians put in a puppet governor after they'd sort of removed most of the people from Judah, and he got assassinated in the seventh month and created a whole heap of other strife. So the guys who were sort of hanging around in Bethel in the northern kingdom, they instituted a fast in the fifth and the seventh month as a sign of grief. But God's response really goes straight to the core of the issue. His response is basically this: I didn't ask you to fast. So why are you coming to me to ask if you can stop fasting? He says, you know, when you fasted and mourned, it wasn't because I asked you to. And when you ate and when you feasted, it wasn't because I asked you to. You've been a rebellious people doing whatever you want, and now you come to me asking if you have to keep fasting. And God kind of says, well, that's none of my business. You're the ones that established it in the first place. Isaiah 58 and verse 2 says, for day after day they seek me out. They seem eager to know my ways, as if they were a nation that does what is right and has not forsaken the commands of its God. They ask me for just decisions and seem eager for God to come near them. Why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen it? Why have we humbled ourselves and you have not noticed? Yet on the day of your fasting, you do as you please and exploit all your workers. Your fasting ends in quarrelling and strife and in striking each other with wicked fists. You cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Is this the kind of fast I have chosen, only a day for people to humble themselves? Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed and for lying in sackcloth and ashes? Is that what you call a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? See, we've got a few things happening here. Yes, the people from Bethel are coming down to seek the Lord, but remember they're the people from Bethel, where Jeroboam had set up a system of worship according to what he thought. And so he set up a golden calf, because that's what the Israelites did before, and he said, here's your God, this is how we're going to worship, so you don't have to go down to Jerusalem. And basically set up their own thing, did their own thing out of religion, not out of relationship. They weren't too concerned about what God thought about things, they just wanted to look as if they were doing the right thing before God. And the people followed. Verse 7 says, are these not the words the Lord proclaimed throughout the earlier prophets when Jerusalem and its surrounding towns were at rest and prosperous, and the Negev and the western foothills were settled? So God's about to add to his response, but he prefaces it by saying, I thought I'd already made myself clear, actually, before you were even sent into exile, before I took you out, when things were going well in the land, I'd sent my prophets and they'd already explained what's required, what needs to happen. And so verse 8 says, and the word of the Lord came again to Zechariah. This is what the Lord Almighty said. Administer true justice. Show mercy and compassion to one another. Do not oppress the widow or the fatherless, the foreigner or the poor. Do not plot evil against each other. Because God's more interested in what's going on in our hearts than our outward appearance. And so these guys come down from Bethel looking really spiritual. We've fasted for 70 years in the fifth and seventh month to show that we're concerned about what's happened to Jerusalem. And God says, Well, I didn't ask you to do that. And haven't I already made clear what it is that I require from you? Basically, before you worry about fasting, let's get your lives together and live in a way that reflects what's going on, you know, that your heart is actually turned towards me. Reading on in Isaiah 58, verse 6, it says, Is not this the kind of fast that I've chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and unite the cords of the yoke? To set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You'll cry for help, and he will say, "Here am I." If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourself in behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You'll be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. See, Jesus kind of had a bit to say about this when he said to the Pharisees, look, you know, you fast and you wear your sackcloth and ashes and, you know, throw ash on your head and all that sort of thing. But he said it's all show because what's going on inside you is broken. You're like whitewashed tombs because on the outside, yeah, it looks like you're being really spiritual, but the fact is you're not living out my nature and my character in the way that you conduct business with one another through the week. You know, you're happy to sort of debase yourself with fasting, but you're also quite happy to talk maliciously to other people and to put other people down and to, you know, use dishonest scales. You know, you're happy to rip people off through the week. He said, well, all the outside stuff, that's all nonsense if your heart's not right. His response to them when they asked, should we keep on fasting? He says, look, why don't you just administer justice? Why don't you show mercy and compassion to one another? And stop oppressing those who can't defend themselves. The foreigner, the poor. And stop plotting evil against each other. In Micah 6:8 it says, he has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Because he's really more interested in what's going on in our heart. Whether we're living out of the law rather than trying to keep the law, there's a difference. Because when we try to keep the law, it's religious and it's all about outward appearance, even though our heart might be wicked. We can still keep the pretense that we've got everything, you know, that we're spiritual people. But God's really interested in our hearts. And as we talked about before, where it says to show mercy, that can be translated as to show covenant faithfulness, to show that we're members of his household, that we have been joined to him and we represent his character in everything that we do. And so, you know, as we read that, we're kind of, you know, got to ask ourselves the question, are we administering justice in the way that we live on a day-to-day basis? Or are we showing favoritism? Are we showing mercy? Are we showing covenant faithfulness? Are we reflecting God's nature and character in the way that we treat other people? Are we showing compassion towards one another? Are we oppressing the widow and the fatherless, that is those who don't have access to the protections that they would have otherwise? What about the foreigner? What about the people who are coming into our nation? How are we treating them? And what about the poor? And are we plotting evil against each other? Because really, until we've addressed those issues, God's not interested in our fasting. Now, I'm not saying not to fast. Jesus, you know, said that fasting is important. He fasted and, you know, he said that, you know, casting out a demon, that this one only comes out by prayer and fasting. So, but really, unless our heart is, we've got our heart attitudes right and we're fasting in obedience to the Lord, if we're just doing it in our flesh and our own strength, it doesn't count for anything. God's not interested. Verse 11, so God's saying, look, I've already told you what I require. I require you to live in a way that carries my name well, that you're not using my name in vain, that when you say that you belong to me, are you reflecting who I am? And verse 11 says, but they refused to pay attention. Stubbornly they turned their backs and covered their ears. They made their hearts as hard as flint, and would not listen to the law or to the words that the Lord Almighty had sent by his Spirit through the earlier prophets. So the Lord Almighty was very angry. In fact, we see in 2 Chronicles 36 and verse 15 that the Lord, the God of their ancestors, sent word to them through his messengers again and again, because he had pity on his people and on his dwelling place. But they mocked God's messengers, despised his words, and scoffed at his prophets, until the wrath of the Lord was aroused against his people and there was no remedy. He brought up against them the king of the Babylonians, who killed their young with the sword in the sanctuary and did not spare young men or young women, the elderly or the infirm. God gave them all into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. So there's kind of a pretty significant point being made here. God's saying, don't go back to the way you were living before that caused me to have to send you into exile. Verse 13 says, when I called, they did not listen. So when they called, I would not listen, says the Lord Almighty. I scattered them with a whirlwind among all the nations where they were strangers. The land they left behind them was so desolate that no one travelled through it. This is how they made the pleasant land desolate. And I guess the word hits hard, that we don't want to be people who make the pleasant land desolate. We want to see the Lord flourish and his favour flourish. Because when he called, they didn't listen. So when they called, God didn't listen. And so the challenge of Zechariah 7 is, in our efforts to please God, are we doing it in our own strength? What about the greater issues of the law? You know, Jesus said to the Pharisees, you tithe and you keep all the feasts and that sort of thing, but you neglect the greater parts of the law about showing justice and mercy and compassion. You know, as a church, it's our goal that we represent him well in all that we do. That we're not a people who are just about outward appearance and about show, but what happens in the workplace, what happens in our homes, what happens in our communities, the way that we relate to people, the way we treat one another, the way we respond to the situations around. Are we reflecting who God is and his character? Because that's the thing that brings delight to his heart. That's the thing that, you know, when we look at fasting is about denying ourselves so that we can set ourselves apart for him. But the real denying ourselves happens when people are being unkind to us. Can we deny ourselves and not try to justify ourselves? Can we bless those who curse us? When we're threatened, can we pray for those who are threatening us? Can we be people who maintain justice? People who show mercy when it's not easy to do that? Because that's what Jesus taught us to do. Can we forgive when people offend us? Because when we do that, that's the denying ourselves that God's interested in, when we lay down our lives for his sake so that his character can come through.